Ed Henry joins us on Sports Byline, and this is a first for us because usually our guests are players, coaches, managers, owners, and commissioners. But Ed Henry is Fox News Channel's chief White House correspondent, and I thought we'd class up the show a bit. He's written a book about Jackie Robinson called 42 Faith. What motivated you, Ed, a news guy, to write a book about Robinson, who is one of the icons of baseball?
It's a great question. I'm a major baseball fan. I've really got a passion for the game, but I never thought I'd write a book, certainly not about a Dodger because I grew up a Yankees fan, but I came upon this accidentally, really, 10 years ago. It was October 2007. I'm a young reporter in Washington, and I'm invited to this big dinner at the Belgium ambassador's house. And I thought, wow, I've made it. This is going to be a big dinner. It's going to be fun. It's fancy pants, all the work. Strike one in baseball parlance was when I sat down and I heard the Belgium ambassador say at his home that he was serving pigeon. Now, I learned later that there's a fancy term for this, and someone as fancy as yourself might know it. A kid like me from Astoria, Queens, I didn't know it's called squab.
Yes.
It's actually a delicacy I see in Belgium. But, you know, growing up in New York City and then Long Island, I thought, what in the world? All I could think about were these dirty birds, the pigeons. Okay. So, strike two is you cut into it, and it's basically got these little bones, and you're picking at it. Strike three was, this is a relatively small dinner party. A senator was there getting an award, and it, as one to happen in Washington, rather than just giving us a 2 or 3 minute thank you and gracious remarks, senator basically filibusters for 20 minutes or something. And so strike three, I turned to the woman next to me, and I said, it's really been nice, but I'm going to leave before dessert because the World Series is on. It was the Rockies and the Red Sox. I didn't really have a dog in the fight, but I said I was taking off. The woman said, are you a baseball fan? I said, yeah. She said, my late father-in-law had a major role in baseball history, but the story's never been told. Now, I know you, like I, would sit back down, and I did. And I said, what are you talking about? And this woman said, Donna Shore was her name. She said that her father-in-law was a minister in Brooklyn in 1945. And there was a knock at the door one day. The secretary calls up to the second floor, says, a man is here. He has a problem. He needs to see the minister right away. Send him up. The minister's doing work at his desk. The man says, in a state of despair, I need to think on this. I need to be alone in my thoughts. And the minister says, I'll keep doing my work. The man paces. He sits down. He stands up. He sighs. He paces some more. He prays. After 45 minutes of this, the man finally slams his fist down, says, I've got it, grabs his hat, starts to walk out. And as the woman told me, the minister said, what do you mean? Out with it. You have to tell me after, you know, all my patience here. And she turned to me and said, do you know who that man was? And I said, well, if it was 1945, it had to be Branch Rickey because he signed Jackie to the first minor league contract with the Montreal Royals in 45. She said, yep. Branch Rickey secretly had second thoughts about whether he could really go through with signing Jackie to that first contract. And he didn't want to tell anyone. So he had this secret meeting with the minister. And at the end of the meeting, he said, I've decided to sign Jackie Robinson to the first contract, most difficult decision of my life. I needed to be in your presence, Rickey said to the minister. I needed to be in God's presence to know it was the right thing to do. Now, I said, come on, how is this true? And as a reporter, you know, again, this is 10 years ago. I have a day job, as you said, so I can't focus all my energies on tracking down a baseball story from 1945. But obviously, as you also know, this is not just a baseball story. It's about civil rights. It's about America. It's about faith in God. And so I started, you know, collecting string on this over time and learned that the minister, before he died in the early 60s, told his wife about it. Obviously, he kept the conversation confidential, as ministers do, but he didn't want it to be lost on history. So his wife sat on it until Branch Rickey died in the mid-60s and wrote a 5-page essay and put it in the church bulletin. And by the way, the church is Plymouth Church in Brooklyn Heights, a very famous church, still standing today. It was a stop on the Underground Railroad in the 1800s. So there's a lot of symbolism there. And it sent me on a journey to say, yeah, I'm a political reporter, but I want to write this story about faith, not just baseball, and figure out how pivotal was faith in Branch Rickey's decision-making in this move that integrated baseball but really changed America, and maybe more importantly, how important was faith to Jackie Robinson?
You know, it's interesting you bring that up because when I launched Sports Byline as the first national sports talk radio network back in 1988, I asked him if he'd be my very first guest. And now we weren't friends, but he said yes, and he flew in from Reno where he was appearing and came into the studio. We were only 2 hours a night, Monday through Friday. And it was the great Willie Mays, and we talked baseball for an hour.
Wow.
But I want to ask you, Ed, if you came away with the research that you did on this book and knowing what you found out about Jackie Robinson, What did you come away with as far as his feeling about the times and what he was trying to do? Because the first question I asked Willie, I said, Willie, you were 16 years old. You grew up in Alabama, not a particularly open-minded time in this country. How hard was it for you to play baseball with the passion you had for the game? I know what his answer was, and I'm just wondering what you sensed it was like for Jackie Robinson during that time.
Well, it was probably harder because from my research and then even from interviews, whether it's Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, you've heard many others who came after Jackie, who said they're not sure they would have been able to withstand all the pressure and punishment and attacks that he faced. I mean, you know, he wasn't just having racial epithets shouted at him. He was having his life literally in danger. And so the reason why I tie the faith piece in here is, you know, Jackie had, his mother was a Methodist, and Mally Robinson instilled faith in him at an early age. And Jackie then joined a gang, though, because he was raised by this single mom. His dad wasn't around in Pasadena. And remember, he joined a gang, and you may or may not know, and it was a reverend named Carl Downs at that Methodist church in Pasadena, one of my many stops on the research tour, who said, look, you've got this great talent. Four-letter man at UCLA is what he turned out to be. You've got so much athletic talent, you're going to waste this unless you get on the right path. And so Jackie, even after starring on the gridiron at UCLA, for example, on Saturdays years later, would still get out of bed on Sunday morning and go teach Sunday school at the Reverend Downs Church. These are the commitment that Reverend Downs had made to him. So to answer your question about how hard it was for Jackie, I think he faced discrimination throughout his entire life. I mean, there were technically no Jim Crow laws in Pasadena, but it was a very racist town. He faced one discrimination after another. And I think he was primed to deal with the pressure, maybe uniquely qualified. And that's what Brantricki did. I found in my research that he secretly sent out these scouts like Clyde Suckworth, who I'm sure you know all about, and didn't even really tell them what he was doing and what the end result was going to be, but said he wanted to include Negro League stars in his reports, as well as some Latin players and others. And he didn't just have them look at, you know, can he throw the ball from the hole and shortstop to first base. He also wanted to know about their faith. He wanted to know whether or not they had a girlfriend or a wife, because Ricky was planning it all out very carefully, not just this meeting with the minister, but finding out, did someone like Jackie Robinson have a support network when the pressure got hot? You know, he had Rachel there by his side, and as you know, she's still alive, and she was one of the most important pieces of this whole story. So I think to answer your question, you know, Jackie faced some unique pressures, but maybe he was uniquely qualified to handle it, and Brantricki knew that.
Was Jackie committed to playing baseball when he was offered the opportunity by Brantricki, or did it take some persuading?
It took persuading in the sense that he simply did not believe that it was real. I tap into some of his personal writings in his papers at the Library of Congress. And what's interesting is Jackie, you know, talks very openly about a train ride from Chicago where he got a tap on the shoulder from that scout, Clyde Suckworth, who told him at a Negro Leagues game, hey, Robinson, come over here. He's standing at the railing and said, come meet me at the Stevens Hotel, the old Stevens Hotel, because I want to talk to you. And Jackie's like, I've heard this before. He had been approached by other major league teams, and it was all a mirage. So Jackie, in his personal writing, said that when Suckforth gained his trust and finally got him on a train from Chicago to Brooklyn to meet with Brantricki in August of 45 for the first time, he simply didn't believe it. Because remember, another piece that I learned is that the Red Sox had called Jackie and a couple other players in for a tryout before he met with Ricky, months before. And it was basically a sham tryout. They strung them along. They strung these guys along, saying, oh, we really want you to play in the big leagues. And they didn't. They were just doing it for show. They were doing it maybe for public relations. And when Jackie had that tryout at Fenway, the famed Fenway Park, there was somebody in the crowd. It was believed to be maybe even a team executive. It was never fully confirmed, shouting the N-word and other things. So they weren't serious about it. And so to answer your question, you know, Jackie wasn't sure it was real. Once Brantricki sat him down on 215 Montague Street, right where I'm near where I'm standing, by the way, because I was just at an event with Jackie Robinson's surviving son, David Robinson, ahead of the 70th anniversary of Jackie's first game at Ebbets Field. Once, you know, Brantricki convinced him this was for real, he didn't need that much convincing finally. He realized, wait a second, this is my date with destiny.
We only have about 40 seconds before we have to break. How does Brooklyn play into this as far as the story?
Carl Erskine is one of the last surviving Brooklyn Dodgers. He lives in Anderson, Indiana, 90 years old, sharp as a tack. He was very helpful to me. If you're a baseball fan, you'll love 42 Faith because of all the baseball stories Erskine and others tell. And what he tells me point blank is that this could not have happened anywhere but Brooklyn because it was such a melting pot. Remember, Branch Rickey had created the farm system, you know, had created the minor leagues as an executive in St. Louis long before he was in Brooklyn. But St. Louis was not a melting pot, not back then in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. But Brooklyn was and is. And Carl Erskine, somebody who was there, you don't have to take it from me, says that Brooklyn was a critical element to this.
Ed Henry is with us. We're talking about his outstanding book. It's called 42 Faith. I want to urge everybody to check it out. It'll give you a wonderful look-see at a man that was a pioneer when it came to Major League Baseball, and also it was a difficult time in this country, and we're going to make it a selection of the month on the Sports Byline Book Corner. We continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on Sports Byline. Ed Henry is with us on Sports Byline. Again, I hope you'll check out this book. It is just an excellent read. It's called 42 Faith. You mentioned about Rachel, and of course, she was kind of the quiet soldier in the background, but during his darkest hours in making this transition and in being a pioneer and breaking the color barrier, how did she fit into this? What did she do?
Well, she was by his side, and one of the most remarkable things that I found in my research, and the reason why we call it 42 Faith, because of Jackie's strong faith in God that sustained him. He had Rachel by his side, and she had and still has a strong faith. And one of the stories she likes to tell is in that rookie season of 1947. I'll tell you two stories. One, in 47, Rachel remembers that every night after he came home from Ebbets Field, Jackie would come home to their apartment, and he would kneel down, hands and knees, and pray to God, just like his mother Mallie taught him in Pasadena, to maybe, you know, reflect on what had happened that day, what kind of abuse he had had, maybe some of the good things that had happened on the field, and maybe get some sustenance for the day ahead. The second story I'll tell you that's less about faith and more about pure guts, and that's Rachel Robinson in the 50s tagged along with her husband in a meeting with Walter O'Malley, then the owner of the Dodgers, obviously got very controversial when he eventually moved him to Los Angeles. That's a whole other story we could talk about. But basically, Mr. O'Malley was riding Jackie for saying he had an injury and missing a couple of spring training games. And he's riding Jackie and riding Jackie. And finally, Rachel jumped in. He maybe, O'Malley, thought that Rachel would be a shrinking violet as an African-American woman in the 50s. She listened and finally said, you know, I've had enough of this. You know, Jackie busts his butt. He does this. He does that. All he does is bleed Dodger blue. He stands up for his teammates. He stood up to the entire establishment. And she read him the Riot Act. And I recount it in 42 Faith. And what that shows me is this was obviously a time of not just racial discrimination, but a time when women were not, you know, expected to kind of speak up, especially not to the white owner of the world-famous Brooklyn Dodgers. But Rachel Robinson, just like her husband, was fearless.
You know, another person that I've heard who was instrumental in his early days in Major League Baseball with the Dodgers was Pee Wee Reese. Tell me a little bit about him and that story, because a lot of people may not know what Reese did.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because he was serving in the Navy, heading home on a ship near the end of World War II, and it came crackling through a radio that the Dodgers had signed this young African-American player to a minor league contract. And one of Pee Wee Reese's comrades said, hey, did you hear, you know, your Dodgers that you're going back to, you know, they signed a black player. And guess what, Pee Wee? He's a shortstop. Because at that time in the Negro Leagues, Jackie was a shortstop. Of course, he ended up beginning with the Dodgers as first baseman and then really starring at second base. And never really got in Pee Wee's way, became a close friend. But two points. One is Pee Wee says, you know, and he's now long since passed, but he recalled that he was a nervous wreck that Jackie was going to take his job, essentially, not just that he would lose the post at shortstop, but that the folks back home in Louisville, Kentucky, would ride him for saying, look, a black man took your job. This was the times in America. And Pee Wee felt bad. I talked to Larry King, the broadcaster who knew Pee Wee real well before he died. He said Pee Wee felt bad because he became one of Jackie's closest friends. But in the 40s, you know, he was nervous that the folks back home in Kentucky were really going to ride him. But then, of course, there's this kind of legend about that rookie season of 47 that Pee Wee allegedly threw his arm around Jackie in Cincinnati. There's been dispute about that. The conclusion I come to in the book is that Pee Wee, who later became the captain, of course, did show great leadership and stood up for Jackie and did throw his arm around him. But more likely it happened in 1948 in Boston. And the source I have for that is Jackie Robinson himself. I did extensive research and found a magazine article that Jackie himself wrote in the 50s where he recounted it. And while there is a statue, as you know, in Cincinnati, allegedly depicting, you know, something that happened in Cincy in 47. Remember that, as I noted, Jackie was playing first base in 47, not second. And so it's unlikely that while Jackie was being, you know, ridden by some fans, that Pee-wee would have left the shortstop position to go over to first base in 47 to put his arm around him. More likely in 48, when Jackie was now at second base, Pee-wee came over and consoled him. The point is, regardless of which year and which city, is that Pee Wee Reese showed great guts in standing up as a white man for his teammate and saying, enough is enough, cut out the abuse. And that was a leadership moment that stuck with Jackie and I think stuck with a lot of people.
That's the story I had heard as well. Briefly, tell me a little bit about how the fans of baseball received Jackie, not just in Brooklyn, but around the league.
Well, you know, one of the things that's interesting is that Branch Rickey, the general manager of the Dodgers who we talked about at the top, was sometimes jibed, particularly by African-American journalists, for only being motivated not by white or black, but by green, as in money, saying, look, all he wants is to bring more black fans into Ebbets Field. Now, Rickey swore that that was not the case, but I do think it was whether it was intended or not, it was a byproduct of Jackie coming out to play. Two things. Number one, a lot of African-American fans who previously had not bothered to go to Ebbets Field or Cincinnati and these stadiums all around the country. Carl Erskine, the pitcher, remembers, told me that he remembers playing a game in Cincinnati where there were these special trains in the Midwest, and then they played games in the South. There were special trains put together for African-Americans coming from Birmingham and other cities where there were not major league teams, taking them up to a Cincinnati or somewhere else to see, yes, Jackie Robinson play. So many of these owners of the opposing teams that had opposed the integration of the game ended up making a ton of money on Jackie Robinson's back because Jackie coming to their stadium, whether it be in Cincinnati or St. Louis, brought a lot of new fans to the ballpark. But I would be remiss if I didn't mention that one of the key characters in my book is Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner of the Chicago White Sox and the Chicago Bulls, who was a kid in Flatbush, 11 years old, at Jackie's first game, and recounts everything about Ebbets Field for me in 42 Faith. But he also notes that, look, as a white kid growing up in Brooklyn, he couldn't care less about Jackie's skin. He just wanted a good player who was going to finally put the bums over the top. And I think that's what's fascinating to me as I research this, that the kids in Brooklyn got it before many of the adults. They said, we just want somebody who's going to help them finally win that darn World Series, white, black, or whatever. And, you know, rather than getting into the racial business, a lot of kids like Jerry Reinsdorf at the age of 11 in Flatbush, they couldn't care less. As long as the guy can hit the ball, who cares if he's white or black? And, you know, it took a lot of the rest of the country maybe to a lot longer to figure that out. But I think some of the kids actually got it before the adults.
We only have about 2.5 minutes, and I want to talk about something in your book. You say, while I was covering President Obama for CNN in March 2011, I had a chance to attend an off-the-record cocktail party with him at the White House. From the outside, it probably appeared as if there was not much love lost between the two of us. That's why the private conversation we had the night in the historic Cross Hall of the White House about Jackie Robinson was so remarkable. And you talk about the president saying, I want you to tell her, meaning Rachel Robinson, something for me.
Yeah.
Tell her I believe there is a straight line from what Jackie did to me being elected the first African-American president. I want you to tell her that. You know, when I read that, I got goosebumps.
Yeah, it was moving to me. It's rare for any president to say to a journalist, hey, I want you to send a message to someone, particularly because, you know, we had some back and forth when I was covering it, just like, you know, White House correspondents will do. But this wasn't a buddy-buddy thing. It was just him saying, look, I want you to send this message. It reminded me of the gravity of Jackie Robinson's legacy. And I think that is the key. It transcends baseball. and it transcends sports. It's not just a civil rights story. It's not just a faith story that I talked about. It's not just a baseball story. This is a man who opened the door for Bill Russell in the NBA, who, by the way, Bill Russell was one of the pallbearers at Jackie's funeral in 1972 for that very reason. He expanded it far beyond just baseball all the way into politics and our government, because there wouldn't be a Barack Obama without Jackie Robinson. And so he opened the door. The door might have been cracked open by Branch Rickey, but I think Jackie Robinson kicked that door down.
In the minute we have left, what do you want people to take away from this book, Ed?
That there were two men who were of Branch Rickey and Jackie Robinson, who were of different generations, different races, came from different parts of the country. I talked about Pasadena, where Jackie came of age. Rickey came up on a farm in Ohio along the Kentucky border. So different generations, different regions, different races, but they were bound together by baseball and a strong faith in God. If you put those two together, that's about as American as you can get.
Are you happy with the way the book came out?
I love it. The cover of the book looks fantastic. We've got the 42 there and Jackie reaching for a ball as if he's reaching for the heavens. And that's what 42 Faith is all about. And I just can't wait till your listeners get a chance to put their hands on it, because I'm very proud of it, and I really appreciate the time we spent, because I think your questions were very insightful. And I'm looking forward to actually coming in and sitting down with you and having a longer conversation.
I was just going to tell you, I have so many more questions of you, and I would enjoy a conversation in person very, very much. You are welcome here anytime, so I'll look forward to you reaching out and let me know what your schedule is. Thank you, Ed.
Yeah. All right. Take care.
Ed Henry with us again. Ed is not a coach, not a player, not a manager, not a commissioner. He is actually with Fox News Channel. He's the chief White House correspondent. And check out this book. It's one of the great books on baseball, on sports, and it's called 42 Faith. We continue across the country and around the world. It's good to have you here with us on America's Sports Talk Show.